Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I'm your host, Scott, and you can find me on Twitter at XorsonX. I'm here with Brian, you can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. And we're here with Damien, you can find on Twitter at Damien Johnson. You can find us on Instagram at Instagram.com/TheComicRoast. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TheComicRoast/ReviewAndRoast. Pretty much everywhere for both of those, so you know the spiel. You listen to it every week. Our number one is actually going to be Eternal Empire this week. Chris is, it was his pick. We were trying to wait for him, but he's, he's having a hell of a time getting on this week, so we're going to do it without him. Let's hope we can manage. And our over-under is going to be just anything related to cults. So get ready to praise me as I make you drink my lemonade. Iced tea? Something? Nothing? Nailed it.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Did I miss anything?
Are we all good?
I don't know. Brian's pretty quiet today. I don't know why. It's fucking weird.
I was writing down something just so I don't forget.
Oh, I probably should do the same. Let's see. Yeah, well, last week we did our little special live at the Blue Box for everybody, so that was, I hope you all enjoyed that. I don't know what happened with the intro there, but it wasn't like that when I was editing it, so I don't know what the hell, I must have hit something. Other than that, we just, FYI, just throwing it out there, next week we got Memorial Day, so we got actually quite the gaming tournament and or day planned, so we're probably going to be off next week. So don't go looking for it, but who knows, maybe we'll fool you. Yep, that's about it. Other than that, my week has been... Oh, you know what? It's been about, a month or two since I said I started reading Hitchhiker's Guide. Well, I haven't really touched it since then until a few days ago when I finally started reading it again because I wanted to get through whatever shows I was watching so that I could be show-free for when House of Cards starts in the next week or two. So I blew through about, 10, 15 chapters in the last couple of days, and I'm liking it more than I like the movie, so that's got to be a good thing. It's kind of funny to read it now as, like, being a first-timer, because, basically the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy sounds to me like it's basically just a smartphone or a small e-reader. But it has a wealth of information, i.e. a phone connected to the internet. So for something that was written back in the 70s just to predict cell phones, what? Illuminati? Do-do-do-do. Nothing? No?
I have been watching a lot of Alex Jones lately.
You're weird.
I'm kidding.
Other than that, I've just been... I actually spent most of my week outside of work, of course. I've spent most of my week in the garage getting my speakers ready for my new turntable, which I got the other day, and my new amp that came this morning. So all I gotta do now is finish the speakers, hook it all up, and I'll start listening to vinyl again. Yay!
Awesome.
I hope so. We'll see. I mean, I've dumped quite a bit of money into something like this, so this is kind of an experiment that I hope goes well. But I tried to do my best with the funds that I had available. So, nailed it.
I like it.
Me too.
And since you might be housing my records shortly, you'll get to listen to those, what's left of them.
Well, the beauty of it is the turntable that I got, when I first started looking at them a few years ago, that turntable was about $300 or so, give or take. Over the years, the price has come down a little bit. I think the cheapest I've seen it was like $250, and then it came down to like $240. I don't know why, but, I bought my stupid new cell phone. Actually, I love my new cell phone, but I bought it at Best Buy. So I had like $60 credit there. So I looked there. They were selling the turntable, which I didn't know they had, but they were selling it cheaper than Amazon. Plus, I had like $40 off or whatever the hell it was. So I paid $180 for just like $250, $300 turntable. I'm pretty pumped. And then... my little hybrid tube amp showed up this morning. I hope that sounds as awesome as I'm hoping it does. And then the speakers that we're building I'm pretty pumped because
Mark Maron's really high in the tube amp.
He also has a $2,500 tube amp. Mine was only like $150, but has Bluetooth connectivity.
Oh, all right.
So we'll see. It's got mixed reviews online. Most people say it does fine. It's just a handful of idiots. They're like, my tubes came broken. 1 star. Yeah, well, you know, you call, you get them replaced, and then you review it, you nerd. I hate people that review stuff before they've even used it. You know what I mean? It came broken. Yeah, well, that's a packaging issue. That's not a product issue. Sorry.
I think Amazon users get confused as to the purpose of the review itself. It's not a Yelp review.
Right.
It's not based on service. It's based on your satisfaction with the product itself.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I'm pumped to hear how it's all going to sound, and I've actually got a couple of new records coming this week or the next week or two. I got the new Scale of the Summit coming hopefully soon, and I just pre-ordered the new At the Drive-In. So, yay vinyl. And then I found a new record store. Man, I'm trying not to nerd out, but I'm trying to like nerd out a little bit. Gives me something else to do, I guess.
To distract yourself from the horrors of everyday life.
Or my amazing everyday life? Oh, wait, no. Yeah, you were right.
Ah,
someone else talk for a minute. Jesus Christ. I've been going for 6.5 minutes already.
Jeez. I'm already bored of you, too. Let's see. Corporate shakeup at work this week. Super awesome. And I mean that super sarcastically. So I've kept myself preoccupied by reading an enormous amount of Doom Patrol. And I finished Volume 3 of Alex and Ada. So that's kept me slightly distracted, and I sold a bunch of old books so I can get Feast for Odin.
Yay.
Other than that, let's see. Work was the worst this week in many ways, and I had to get my car fixed, so that sucks as well. But, yeah. I'm hoping life has been chaotic the last month or so, and it's probably going to be chaotic for another month. So once that all settles down and I can go back to No Pants Friday, so that's all I really care about right now.
That's neat.
Yeah, I mean, I just literally, like, I feel like a zombie half the time in the last, like, 3-4 weeks. Like, I come home, I make food, and I just stare at the wall until I got to go to sleep.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, so I've not had any corporate shakeups or anything. I've been to the doctor's a bit this week, which has been kind of lame, but everything seems okay. I'm just dealing with some sort of weird sickness. Because of that, I've not been able to do a lot of fun things. Like, I haven't gotten a chance to see Guardians yet, which I'm excited to do at some point. I heard it's good.
So good.
Yeah. Kids seem to be enjoying that one. Besides reading the number one, finally, I actually got a bunch of singles over the past couple weeks. Well, not a bunch, but, you know, a lot. Well, first of all, Doom Patrol keeps has so many various covers and comes out so sporadically lately for me that I keep buying the same issues over and over again with just different covers.
I've done quite a bit of that myself.
Now. I bought the issue number 5 that has the Feral Darmple cover, which is a beautiful cover, so I like having it, but it's like, I just read this. And I know I should open it up. I should probably open it up and, like, flip through it just to double check, but I just didn't realize that was a thing.
Well, my problem with that is,
for a couple weeks.
If I go ahead and do something like that, then I open it up. See, I don't want to open it up and then see something that I don't want to see until I read it. You know what I mean? So I'm like, So I actually I end up going up to the counter and asking them because they have on record what I've bought like every week. So I'm like, did I buy this yet? And they're like, yep. I'm like, all right, nice. I'll go put it back.
All right, that's a good idea. I should ask my shop might have something like that.
It's quite possible.
Yeah. But I ended up buying another double again with a different cover, which is also quite nice. Because I don't want to miss any Doom Patrol, because I like Doom Patrol quite a bit. I'm enjoying this new arc as much as the old one. So, pretty stoked. I picked up that Bug.
How is that?
It's weird. It's super weird. I guess it's written by Mike Allred, and I believe his son. And then his wife is the colorist, Laura Allred. She's worked on a lot of his stuff before. It looks beautiful, and it's interesting. It's very strange. Like, I don't really... It gets pretty, like, deep into the DC universe with some characters that I don't really recognize or maybe have, like, a vague memory of. So there's a lot of, you know, there's I mean, there's mentions of people like Darkseid and Batman's in there and stuff, but there's other characters that I'm just not fully sure who they are. I've heard of Orion, I believe, but I'm not sure who that is. There's a very early version of Sandman in here, so like the Golden Age Sandman. So it's very strange. It seems like it may be really cool. I think if you know a lot more about sort of the deeper Golden Age DC, you'd probably get more of a kick out of it than I did. But it's, you know, it's beautiful. Mike Allred's art is always great. I was a huge Madman fan when that was first coming around. Giant dork for that. So it's just, I kind of like seeing stuff. I gotta tell you, though, I don't know if I mentioned this on the past podcast. There's been Mike Allred's one of those guys from, like, you know, the 90s. So I loved his stuff. There's a lot of people like that whose work I kind of rediscovered in the 90s. I kind of, like, rediscovered comics from when I was a kid. And Sam Keith is one of those guys. And I ended up seeing that he was drawing a new book. It's like Eleanor and the Egret, I believe, or something. And I got the first issue, and I hated it. Hated it. Like, that was going to be our number one. So I'm not into it. I love the Max, and I liked his work on the Hulk. I just liked the way he drew. I thought it was really super cool and interesting, especially for the time. And this just is, I don't know, it came off to me as just kind of sad. I was super not into it. So
that's the dude from Chew as well, the guy for John Layman.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I was like, oh, that's interesting, because I think he's wrapping Chew up now, and maybe he's moving on to this. And then I was looking at it, and I was like, I don't know, this looks lame. Chew is really good, and this looks like, I don't know, not for me.
Yeah, not for me either, which is weird, because Sam Keith is someone, like I said, who I hold in very high regard. I still love all that Mac stuff. I still think that stuff's great. He's someone like Ted McGaver, another guy. Someone else whose stuff I loved the 90s. Plastic Forks, The Extremists, like all these titles are so beautiful and awesome. I thought his Batman Black and White story, where Batman goes and does a does an autopsy, like kind of secretly, like after hours, like sneaks in and like does an autopsy on this girl and kind of puts together the story of what happened to her. That's such a cool story. And his Legends of the Dark Knight, the story called Engines, I thought was super cool. So I was just like, man, Ted McKeever's fucking amazing. I love this guy. And then the last few years, like everything he's done has just been awful. Like Image started reissuing all like the Metropolitan and am I saying that right? I think it's Metropolitan AD and you know, Eddie Current and all this like really great stuff, his early stuff. And they started doing these newer titles. And when my buddy worked at Image, he'd send them to me, and I was like, oh, I'm so stoked to get Ted McKeever books in the mail. And just again, just really dislike them. His art style is like real realistic now. I just do not enjoy it. So I've been disappointed by a bunch of 90s people. But not being disappointed, I kept up with Grass Kings and Royal City. So Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent, two guys who I think have pretty damn good records lately. I think they're still and kind of getting better. Grass Kings, I was, you know, kind of half and half there on at first, and now that I kind of understand the pace, which is pretty slow, they're definitely like bite-sized stories in those issues. They're not, it's like Saga in that way, where you get like maybe one event and a couple little things that surround that event, and that's it. Like, it's not like you get, it's definitely a more of a graphic novel, I think, pace story. But that said, it's still great. And then I also picked up the third issue, that Helena Crash, which I'm just totally into. Just super crazy pulpy. You what?
I saw that yesterday. But it was
I love it.
I was going to say, I just saw it was like on issue 3. I was like, I'll just wait. Check it out later.
Yeah, I think it's great. I'm sure two more issues will probably be a trade. So yeah, you might as well wait. But I think the art's awesome and the story's totally insane. And I just like that kind of pulpy silliness.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same with Royal City, because I did buy the number one back when we were going to record it. And I actually listened to the podcast before I read it, but I read it like maybe a week ago, and I was like, oh my God, this thing is really good, like exceptionally good, even for Jeff Lemire, which is really common for him. He's known for doing like exceptional work. This is fantastic, even by his standards, so...
Yeah, it's gonna be good. That's gonna be a great trade.
Yeah, that's why. And then we went yesterday, and I'm like, they're on like issue 3 or 4 already. I'm like, I'll just wait. I don't even want to bother trying to buy these month to month. I want to get the whole thing and just read it at once.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I forgot all about Royal City. But, you know, when I was looking at the books yesterday, I saw, like, they're up to number 3 on Grass Kings. I'm like, I remember kind of liking that, too. No, well, guess I'm waiting on that.
Yeah, there's a handful of writers.
It's good.
I was saying, there's a handful of writers that, like, I know I can count on.
Me?
No. Matt Kent, Jeff Lemire, Ed Brubaker.
Yeah, and I'm actually a little bummed that I don't see, and that's what I hate. When I don't go to the shop for like 2 weeks and I don't read anything for like 2 weeks, I forget what I have piled up here. So it's like, did I keep going with the dregs? Did I not go with the dregs? Do I buy them while I'm here? Should I wait? And it's like next time I finally realize that I missed one. Then when I go back to the store, they don't have the one that I missed. It's like, fuck. Such a pain.
Yeah, that Ethers comic I wanted to do that with.
Yeah.
I was in, that's the Matt Kent one, right? That he's, is it Ether? Is that the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I picked up the number 1, and then I totally forgot about its existence, and I think I saw it was on number 5. I was like, oh, shit. And a lot of times my shop will have back issues, that kind of stuff. And they had every one but number 2, and I'm like, oh, fuck. Okay, well, never mind. I'll just wait.
Well, it was the same thing, like, you know, I know we haven't talked about it in a while, but, you know, we're reading on, you know, the new Archies or whatever, and I got up to, you know, the teens, and then I missed a month somewhere, and then when I went back the next month to the store, I'm like, oh, shit, I'm like 2 behind. They had every single issue except the one that I missed. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. I'm like, well, I guess I'll just get it on Amazon. And now it's been like 6-8 months before since I've read it. So I'm like, you know, this just sucks. Because I'll put stuff, I put stuff on my pull list. But like, if it's something that has like 4 or 5 variant covers every month, like, I want to pick the cover that I want. So, I mean, they'll let you swap them out. You just got to let them know. But at the same time, like, it's just annoying to have to be like, I got to go swap this. All right, go ahead. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather just dig through it and look, and then I miss an issue, and then I just get screwed.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
And then I bring a stack of comics, the stupid half-price books, and get $7. It's like, dude, come on.
I, at this point, look at it as, they're giving me $7 to make more space in my living quarters, and that's
yeah,
a fair enough trade-off in some way. Plus, otherwise, I have to haul everything back to the house and then put them back.
Well,
then,
like, honestly, I put a lot of the stuff on Amazon, but if it's, yeah, like, if it's, I mean, not already on Amazon,
yeah, for me, what? Oh, go ahead. Sorry, I was breaking up.
Oh no, I was gonna say, you know, I mean, If I go to put something on Amazon and it's not up there already, I don't go through the trouble of creating a post. Or if it's only selling for like 99 cents, I don't bother putting it up because what's the point? You know. So those I just put in a pile. Now when I have a big enough pile, I bring it up there. But I mean, I don't know. I was hoping for more than $7 because I had a bunch of comics, I had some college books, I had some, you know, some regular books. I didn't get nothing.
Yeah, those textbooks they'll maybe give you 5 cents for. They're not worth anything.
Every other textbook that I had from that pile that I put on Amazon sold from anywhere between $10 to $100.
You should have sold them on Amazon then.
They weren't going for more than a couple of bucks on Amazon, so I figured screw it. Those ones, if they were still selling for a lot, I would have kept them up there, but oh well. Womp womp.
Womp womp indeed. Yeah, the only other thing I'm reading right now, I'm reading a book called Utopia for Realists by Rutger Bregman, and it's The Case for Universal Basic Income, and it's pretty interesting. It's not a very long book, and I would definitely recommend it. It's something I've kind of had a lot of questions about over the years with people, with friends of mine, the idea of a universal basic income and open borders and a 15-hour work week, like those things. People are like, oh, I think this would be a lot of, you know, people have a lot of freedom. But then part of me thinks, like, you know, what's to stop this, you know, that a universal basic income from becoming the new zero? You know, like, for example, you know, the zero rent controls in Seattle, and landlords can raise rent whatever they want, whenever they want. So if suddenly everyone in Seattle, Washington, it was known that we all got an extra $1,000 a month, what would stop landlords from just raising rents across the board $1,000? Like, just to siphon that extra money off of everyone. And then we lose out on lots of services and you know, stuff like that. So I've got a lot of questions, but this book is kind of answering some of them. So if anyone's interested in that kind of stuff, I would say check out this book. He did an interview with my bass player on NPR a couple weeks back, and Shane had told me a bunch of interesting stuff that they had talked about during the interview. I didn't get a chance to listen to it on the radio, but I decided to go pick up the book and roll from the library. And it's pretty good. It's got some good good praise from people like Steven Pinker, if you guys ever read his book, Better Angels of Our Nature. A lot of this book kind of builds off that book, if you have read that, which is also quite good. But it's good. I feel like a smarty pants understanding what he's talking about.
Yeah, I think I would definitely check that out.
It's cool. It's not like the libertarian idea of universal basic income, which is, I think, what I was sort of describing there. Like, this would not be that. So I think it's interesting. It gives a lot of perspective. It talks about how there was a point in which in time where people were like, a 40-hour work week? That's insane. Like, workers will go crazy, and they'll just have nothing to do, and there'll be, you know, riots in the street, and murder rate will go skyrocketing, and our economy will be destroyed if we have a 40-hour work week. That's too little for people to work. And Henry Ford was like, Henry Ford of all people, he was the first one to be like, absolutely not. 40 hours is the maximum anyone can work at my factories. I want to, and he gave everyone more pay. He paid everyone more than anyone else was getting paid at that time. He gave everyone paid time off and, you know, maximum of 40 hours, paid for overtime. And this was completely unheard of across the entire industrialized world, like not that long ago. I mean, we're talking about when cars were around. So, you know, up until that point, that was like just insanity. And then it worked out. He was right. Everything got better. The economy got better. Everyone got happier. Like, you know, so it's a great book. I would totally recommend checking this out. And it's really short. Like, you could probably read this in an afternoon if you didn't have your kid constantly being hungry.
You have hands. Figure it out yourself.
Yeah, so Utopia for Realists.
I'm going to add it on Amazon.
Excellent.
Unless it's not on Amazon, then I'm screwed.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. When I went to the library, I accidentally reserved two copies of it, and there's like a really nice hardback version that looks really beautiful, and a paperback version that looks like it looks kind of chintzy, but it's the exact same book. It looks like the kind of book where it's like, you know, I know people really what's going on with the lizard people. Like, it kind of has that, like, I made this at Kinko's vibe, but it's good.
Alrighty. Should we ramble about the number one here for a minute? Okay, so after a little bit of technical difficulties, we're going to dive into our number one. Hopefully we're all good now. So that was Eternal Empire, which was Chris's pick. Since he's not here to tell us about it, I'm going to pass the torch on to Damien because why not? Let's do that.
Yeah. Sounds good. I read it. I totally read it.
I read it twice. I don't know. Better let someone else take it.
All right. Yeah, Eternal Empire. Well, I mean, I think all of us, well, I'm assuming all of us are pretty excited since it's Sarah Vaughan and Jonathan Luna.
I know I am.
We know from Alex and Ada, of course. Probably one of the best stories, comic stories of the last, like, decade. I mean... God. I was super excited for this one. When you guys said Eternal Empire, I remember thinking like, oh, seriously, like, what is this book going to be?
No, I saw the poster hanging up at A&F, which is our comic store, a few months in advance, and I was like, yeah, I'm like that. Put it in my box right now.
Yeah.
Well, I follow Jonathan Luna on Instagram, so I've been seeing previews for quite a while.
Oh yeah, I guess I should follow that guy. I didn't even thought about that. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. This first of all, I thought this was great. Eternal Empire is a story about. It seems like some world. I don't know if it's necessarily this. Well, definitely not this one, because of some celestial bodies that we don't have.
Correct.
But about a world that has been seemingly like crushed in some sort of great war, and there's now this empire that kind of rules over this whole world, and it seems like they are keeping big swaths of this world occupying big swaths of this world and keeping all the people under essentially are all being used as slaves for slave labor for feeding armies, and I'm assuming you know, building things or whatever. Like, there's just massive entire countries, it seems like, of slaves. And then one of these slaves, this girl, starts receiving these crazy visions that basically compel her to run away from a situation which everyone, the slaves and their jailers, basically all feel like would be insane to do. Like, so
yeah,
she does something completely outside of the realm and sets her on this crazy adventure. And I'm assuming it'll be an adventure of some sort. Yeah, and that's basically a way to kind of wrap up without telling you everything what happens in the first issue.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I know I was as well. I was pretty pumped about this. And actually, to reference the Instagram again a little bit, just this past week they posted a map of this world on his Instagram. So it's actually kind of neat to, now that, to go back and reread it, and you know, you hear about all these different kingdoms that have been taken over and conquered, and their plans for the future conquering, and now you kind of got a visual of where all this stuff is and where she escaped from, and kind of awesome. Like, I don't know, like I'm, and again, I might be holding it in high regard because I'm such a fan of Alex and Ada, but I also really thought this was kind of awesome. It didn't give you a lot, but it gave you enough to really want to know what is going on. You know, who this Empress is, who these people are she's conquering, what these visions are all about, and who that guy at the end was. Kind of doing almost like the Doctor Strange type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I found it to be super interesting.
Well, yeah. I just finished the last trade of Alex and Ada this past week.
Yay.
And I remember you and Chris seemed to kind of allude to it being not quite the satisfying ending. I completely disagreed. I thought it was amazing. That book is dying to be a film.
Oh, yeah.
It is so picture perfect to be adapted to a feature-length movie. I don't know why it's not been done yet or why it's not being greenlit.
I don't think it's nowhere near as popular as it should be, I don't think.
That thing should be on a Hollywood screen during Oscar season. It's so good.
That is the first thing I recommend to anybody when they ask for a recommendation. I don't even care that it's 2 years old.
I feel like it could be Ex Machina meets When Harry Met Sally. Which sounds super dumb, but trust me, the book is amazing. Even though, like, the more I read of it, the more I was like, man, I don't really like the artwork that much.
Oh, yeah, I love the artwork.
Everybody looks like a mannequin. It's super weird.
I love it. It's so simple.
On the flip side, I did not like this.
I know you did not. That's why I'm saddened.
I wanted to like it. I've liked other Jonathan Luna stuff. This one I was like, I don't know. Nah. But, you know, I'm open to suggestion later on if you tell me, oh, man, issue 5 was the best ever. Trade comes out next week. I might go, all right. Although I'll say this. It's nothing to do with this book. But the one thing I've noticed, I've been looking at a lot of Image trades that are brand new, and they're not $9.99 anymore, a lot of them. A lot of them are $15 now. So I think that little initiative is over.
Well,
that's probably true. I've noticed that as well. That was a big thing for a while where it's like, oh, I could buy, you know, spend $15 on all these first 5 issues, or $20 on these first 5 issues, or I could just spend $9, you know, like in 2 more months.
Yeah, and I'm noticing they're getting smaller. They're not 6 issues anymore. Now they're like 4.
Yeah, and there's also, it seems like there used to be maybe like a couple months between arcs, and now it feels like it's like Venture Brothers seasons. It's like 6 years between seasons.
Or Arrested Development.
You know, I mean, if they're going to do the price hike like that, I hope that it's all that they're maybe in the works to try and compete with the Marvel and DC film universe or TV universe. Maybe they're going to start doing their own production house.
IDW is already doing that, so I wouldn't be surprised.
It'd be neat. I mean, it would definitely make me feel better about the less product, more money that they seem to be going towards. But I actually kind of would, I mean, if you don't mind prodding and prodding, I want some specifics about why you thought this was stupid.
I didn't think it was stupid. It just wasn't for me. I don't know. It felt more epic and sprawling than I'm used to from Jonathan Luna. And I felt like there was a lot of sentence fragments and, like, unfinished thoughts. which kind of made me feel like this would work better in a trade or in a book maybe, but I feel like in an issue-to-issue format, I'm not going to stick with it because I'm going to be like, oh, wait, what happened? Oh, my God, I forgot about that long thing or that long journey, and I'm just going to be like, the more, like, especially now, because, like, indie books are kind of, in my opinion at least, considering that the DC Rebirth thing seems to have kind of flatlined in terms of it's gone as high as it's going to go, and the Marvel books are selling so poorly. I feel like indie comics have really kind of taken over the forefront, because between manga and Image and Boom, kind of, you know, they're putting out stuff that are getting a lot of critical acclaim. I feel like the superhero books are kind of falling to, like, the, you know, they're trying to shove those into Target now because bookstores are carrying more and more of these, and I just feel like because of that, they're just putting out everything, and some things work better in various formats. Like, I know Jeff Lemire's new book, Roughneck, came out as a book, not as a month-to-month. I feel like maybe this would benefit from a, like, a epic, like, volume rather than, oh, we're going to put it out for 3 months, then we're going to take a month off, then we're going to... Because I think, like, the story is going to be big, and it needs a bigger format to really tell it, I feel.
Okay. I guess I'll let that go.
So this could easily become one of those things where I'm like, yeah, the first chapter was okay, but it continued to get progressively better.
Yeah, I have faith that it will. Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with any of that. I still liked it. I thought it was quite good. The epic thing is true. It does seem like Alex Nadeau is such a tiny story, like a small story in a large world. I feel like that's maybe what this should be, if it isn't going to be. Like this girl's personal story with apparently this fired gentleman. I'm assuming it's going to be like a smaller story. Like I don't, just because of maybe because of Alex and Ada, I don't see this being like this woman is the one who's going to overthrow it all or anything. Maybe they're going to go that direction. I don't know. It doesn't seem like the kind of place they would head. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to expand on that so much. It's just that I have some faith in their ability to take this somewhere interesting.
Yeah.
And I guess my enthusiasm is kind of carrying me through that. I mean, I will definitely say, like, it was a pretty... I mean, I was able to basically sum up the entire issue in, like, basically a couple sentences.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not a ton happened. But I was really excited about some little details. Like, you guys see the whole thing about the suns?
Yeah.
In the back? Like, they actually built 3D models so they could get the accuracy of where the suns would be at certain points in the story.
Wait, what?
Like,
I don't think I've seen
so
that.
There's the three suns.
Oh, yeah.
Although they spelled sunset wrong in the back. Does sunset have three S's in it? Am I crazy?
I think that's how it's spelled on that planet.
Okay. if that's a mistake, they better make it the way it's spelled on that planet all, because I don't know. It seems like they're speaking English to me through most of this book.
No, I actually here. I'll explain it to you right now.
All right.
It's not a sunset. It's a suns set because there's multiple suns.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Nailed it.
There you go. Of course it's sunset. Me and my check my sync, my binary star privilege there.
Right? That's pretty clever.
That's pretty clever.
Took me a second, but hey.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, apparently they like built a 3D model of the solar system with all three suns. So they could like have the suns in the proper place.
See, that's why you just have to have so much faith in what they're going to do, because they're putting so much into developing a map, developing a 3D model of the universe so they can figure out the sunsets and the sun placement in the sky in their own book.
Everybody's yelling at me.
Well, no, I mean, if based off the first issue, you know, I mean, it is what it is. But, but then when you look at the cover of the second issue, and it's, you know, it's almost the reverse of the first issue, it makes you wonder, like, okay, so is she going to have some kind of weird ice powers that she didn't know about? Is this guy got, like, fire? Like, I don't know. I'm intrigued, and I'm excited for the ride, basically, is where I'm at. So,
yeah, I guess that's where I am, too. I mean, it's hard for me to be like, this is going to be fantastic. Like, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty certain. I mean,
Yeah, that's how I feel.
You know, I think this is good. I mean, for like most comics, it's going to be probably the best viewed in a trade form. But I'm gonna get it every month. So
I agree. Brian doesn't.
No, I'll wait. I'll wait to hear a further verdict from the two of you and others if there's more.
Well, then I guess it's number time.
Number time.
Well, since I started, I'll just give my number. I gave it an 8.
Okay. I actually read it twice. Didn't prepare a number before or today, so I'll agree with you and go with an 8.
I will give it a 5.
Womp womp.
Not my favorite thing ever. But I'm finding that more and more, when I check out a book from Image, the first issues are like lackluster to me.
Still an average of 7.
What?
There you go.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
You guys are both doing math in your heads. I already did it.
Nice.
Okay, so, yeah, it turned out it was, you know, Eternal Empire, Sarah Vaughan, Jonathan Luna. Very talented duo. I have high hopes. Brian does not. We'll see. I think me and Damien are going to be right on this one. So, and let's see. I guess moving on to Over and Under, we're going to do nothing specific. You know, not like which cult we think is awesome, but if that's part of what comes up, hey, that's part of what comes up. Other than that, I'm personally going to go with reasons to join, more or less. And overrated, in my opinion, is, it seems to me, now I haven't been part of a cult since I was in Catholic school, pada boom, but I'm gonna go ahead and say overrated as far as cults is, they seem to want to take up a majority of your time, and I don't want to have to give up my entire life just to be part of a cool guy cult. Just saying.
Is there a cool cult?
I mean, there's got to be some.
I mean, I don't know. The Mario Lopez fan club does seem pretty rad, but...
Dude. they're going to teach you how to get the AC Slater hair pretty soon.
We're not a cult. We're just a way of life.
Exactly. Loafers with no socks and a Hawaiian shirt every day.
Shut up, Preppy. Was it Preppy or did he call him Pretty Boy?
Preppy.
It was Preppy.
Man, I know way too much about that stupid
dude. I've seen every episode like at least a dozen times.
What if they reboot Saved by the Bell, but they make it like super gritty? Because that's just the direction everyone thinks you need to take a reboot. So like Screech just at one point like snaps and like, kills a bunch of people, and Slater's just like beating the fucking piss out of him at some point.
I don't know if I would. Oh, God, this is gonna sound bad, but I don't know if I'd want Saved by the Bell to be tarnished in that way.
I'm like, no, nor would I.
But it's bad enough that they're trying to do it with Archie. I haven't seen Riverdale, but I heard it's like, you know, a little more like, I guess, gritty. But
you mean like when they try to go dark on Saved by the Bell, and they're like, oh man, let's do an anti-drug episode. Jesse gets addicted to sleeping pills. What?
I'm so excited.
Or was it?
Well, she's just so delicious.
she's addicted to no-dose for like a week.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, Jesse, what have you done?
There was that.
Oh my God, my shoes don't match. What's happening to me?
When they had Zack and Slater fighting.
Oh, the best bad fight ever.
Yeah. Fighting in the hallway.
One guy pulls a shirt over the other one's head. The other one guy takes a swing and miss. Break it up. Mr. Belding's coming. You're like, oh my God, these two idiots actually did watch that show.
Dude, I will go put it on right now.
I watched that show. I've never seen every episode or anything, but it was definitely... I want to say it was in that block of shows when I would get home from school, like post cartoons, but pre Night Court and Cheers.
See, for me, it was after high school. I used to work at a nursery, and I worked 5 days a week from like 8 a.m. to like 3, and I'd get home, and no one would be home, and the only thing on TV was Saved by the Bell reruns for like 2 hours. And I was just so exhausted from, because I didn't work in like a nurse. I worked in like a landscaping nursery, so like moving trees around all day is like just brutal. So I'd come home, I'm like, ugh, I don't really want to do anything. So I just literally turn on Saved by the Bell and stare at the TV for 2 hours. And the next thing you know, I'm like the trivia king of Saved by the Bell.
I should mention too, when I mentioned like cartoons and stuff, Saved by the Bell was on when I was in high school.
Hey, I watched cartoons into my 20s, 30s, and still. So,
yeah. But I made it sound like it was one of those things like I kind of accidentally watched because I was a latchkey kid. I mean, I definitely watched it. It just happened. It was more of a, you know, a 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock show, and not a 3 o'clock show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's how we all got into it. If we got into it,
I'm not. I watched it. Reruns. I think it may have been on primetime or something. So I think it was part of that whole like a Home Improvement, Full House world.
Yeah, or either that or it was the Saturday morning ones. I forget.
Yeah.
Anyway, my overrated is the alt-right. Because without getting into super long detail or long-winded whatever, they're just super annoying. And what made me pick them, because I feel like this is a personal affront to all of us, particularly on this show. I don't know if you guys know that guy Paul Joseph Watson. He's like...
Boy, I sure heard the name.
He's like Alex Jones's number two, except he lives in Britain. He's like probably around our age, maybe a bit younger, like maybe mid-30s. But he's just like super annoying British guy who's got like crazy YouTube following. He did a video like a month ago called something like Conservatism is the New Punk Rock. And he tried to like explain how like liberalism is the mainstream and they control the media. They control all the movie studios. We're the real rebels in the world. And he's like,
what a dick.
I was just like, what? And he was basically trying to say like, modern day conservatives are like the Sex Pistols in the 70s. I'm like, oh my god, I couldn't believe you actually put this out with a serious. I mean, this is the dumbest video I've ever seen in my entire life. And he's like he's almost like one of the de facto leaders of the alt-right. And I'm like, okay, you want to say what you want to say, fine, I don't care, whatever. You want to co-opt some stupid cartoon frog, whatever. But now you're like dabbling in my territory. Don't lump your stupidity with Dag Nasty in any way, shape, or form, or I'm going to be very upset.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, fuck those guys and their stupid frog.
Yeah, that's you know I could go on for a while about that, so I'll leave it there. But no, that was well said. I mean, it's I'll definitely put it as a cult. It's self-policing in that way, where they all have make sure they have their own like, you know, alt-right purity tests on each other. People like Glenn Beck get pushed away and called cucks because they're, you know, because as much as he's kind of a douchebag, he also, like, you know, helps people. And he feeds the homeless, and he like helps people reintegrate at border crossings and shit. Like, I don't know, he's a monster, but he's in a lot of ways, but he's kind of come around, and now he's like, you know, persona non grata to a lot of these guys.
He's like a Harry and the Hendersons monster.
Kinda, yeah. If Harry and the Hendersons monster start out eating babies.
Now he just licks them and just stares at them going, don't eat it, don't eat it, don't eat it.
So, yeah. I guess my overrated and my underrated are sort of the same thing. I think what's really overrated about cults, I mean, they're pretty awful, but the thing they always seem to have to fall into every single time is they immediately have to start, like, because they become so insular and like they seal themselves off from essentially the rest of the world, they almost immediately have to become criminal organizations.
Yeah.
I've been reading a lot. My bass player has a side project called Synanon, Synanon. And it was, it started off as a drug rehabilitation program in the 50s and 60s, and like any of these programs where people go somewhere to, like, you know, dry out, basically, of course, almost immediately everyone involved, like, loses their fucking mind. And you know, it was a place that they had these games called the truth telling game that became known as the Synanon game, and that ended up, after a while, like, people started basically moving there and living there and started bringing their families there, and it just sort of like naturally became this thing where they became a church and got, like, tax-free exemption status and everything. And then, you know, by the time the 80s hit, Connie Chung is on the news talking about him. In fact, there's a great photo if you look around In fact, if you go to my bass player's Bandcamp page, it's right on there, of Connie Chung sitting there with, like, the Synanon logo behind him, which is this cool S. They got an awesome... Their typeface for their church is this really tall, like, sans serif, all-capital font. Looks like maybe version of Interstate or something, just this cool font. It's just cool looking, like, everything about it was cool. But of course they immediately, like, start trying to kill each other and, like, drug trafficking and like money laundering and shit. And it's like, of fucking course they did. They all do. They all lose their shit and become criminals. And I don't know. Not that I want there to be like good cults, because I think the whole idea is crazy. But it seems like, and this is, I'm gonna jump right into my underrated. It seems like they are like a desperate attempt to try to fix what's sort of wrong with society. Like, they try to be this thing like, what can we do to be helpful? What can we do? And it's like, well, we can't fix everyone, but maybe we can get together and come up with some stuff that we want to do. We can kind of like, you know, get together and sort of like, you know, take care of each other and, you know, strengthen numbers. And, you know, it's kind of us against them right now, but maybe we can bring them to us. And then, but of course, it always completely flies off the rails. Like, immediately.
Yeah, you find that usually, you know, whatever ideals that whatever cult they, you know, that they're trying to fix, not everyone agrees. So that's a huge part of their problems. But
yeah, I mean, dissent is never allowed because dissent is considered like the person who's dissenting isn't considered like, oh, well, that's an interesting perspective. It's like, no, we figured it out. You're wrecking it. You're a wrecker. You must not be part of us. Yeah. You know, it's like
one of us.
Yeah. Satan is good. Satan is our pal.
Well, on that, I was listening to Leah Remini when she was on Joe Rogan's podcast talking about some of her awakening moments when she was still a member of the Scientology cult. And I mean, aside from the methods they use to kind of keep you insular, I actually found myself laughing, and she was being very frank about her like experiences, and it's probably not something she'd appreciate if she heard me laughing at her, but I was laughing at almost everything she's talking about, how they put these weird helmets on her head and put her in a private room and basically tried to convince her to believe that there's this alien being out in the universe and stuff. All these, I mean, I'm getting the details wrong, but it's, I'm just picturing her sitting there in like this $5,000 Versace outfit, like with a colander on her head, with her eyes like taped shut or something, and they're like, you know, playing music from Last, or what's that movie?
The Black Rainbow?
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. Just super weird and stupid. Like, all these, like, classes you have to go to. I'm like, you're part of the dumbest cult in the history of the world. Oh, my God.
They're one of the biggest at this point.
Oh, yeah.
That's the weird part.
But they did, because of it, there's a couple of books that I'm really, really interested in that I kind of heard about adjacent to Scientology. One of them's called Sex and Rockets. It's about that guy Jack Parsons. I guess he tried to start some weird, like, Hollywood masturbation cult back in the 20s or something. I don't know. But, like, that book is, like, high on my list of books to read. Because apparently that guy was a complete maniac, and he's sort of responsible for Scientology existing in a weird way. Because he was really good friends with L. Ron Hubbard at one point. Something to do with...
Okay.
I was going to say, like, something to do with his friendship, L. Ron Hubbard, their weird masturbation cult that they had with some former, like, failing Hollywood actress, and, like, some kind of affair, and a yacht. I don't know.
Getting weird.
It's this weird thing that ties L. Ron Hubbard, Scientology, and the aerospace industry all together in this weird, completely mishmashed, cobbled together package of just total weirdness, and I want to read it super bad. Somebody needs to make a miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into it.
Sex and Rockets. It's kind of an old book, but I totally think everybody should get it, including me, because I've never read it. But you have to order it, unfortunately, because I've looked for it, and it's really hard to find.
Called Sex and Rockets?
Yeah. It's something like The Strange Life of Jack Parsons.
I thought you said Rock and Rollin' something.
No. Where did you... What?
I'll rewind it. I'll listen.
No, you won't.
All right. So, under?
You can go.
Yeah, okay. I'll move this along. Mine isn't so dastardly, I guess, but my underrated would be just the mystique that you would have around you. Like if I started a little cult here and like our thing was we all wore capes, like, and I don't mean like superhero capes, I mean like badass, like villain capes, you know what I mean? Like black with red on the inside and you wear like a fucking top hat or something. Like people would know like, oh, he's he's part of that group. Ooh. And we would do nothing but wear capes and but everyone would think that we're doing all this like cool, weird, evil, like
magicians.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like I just I just think
lock
like
up, lock up your rabbits.
Yeah, I think that would be the coolest part for me. Was I would just be able to, out of the corner of my eye, you could see people staring. I'm like, yeah, motherfucker, look at that cape. You know what I mean? Like, that's the shit. I think that would be awesome.
But yeah, you'd have to have like the full tuxedo look, and you'd be walking around in flip flops and basketball shorts. And people
doesn't like, matter what I'm wearing as long as I got the cape. People would be like, oh, he's part of the comic roast, the Illuminati, whatever. I couldn't think of a name. Shut up.
Well, I was just thinking, well, you know, to be honest, like a year ago, I went to that show that I saw a bunch of people that I haven't hung out with in a while.
Right.
And I was overheard one of them talking. Apparently, he is a member of the Masons now, which I was like, oh, whoa. And I was like asking a few questions because I was like, yeah, I'm not going to join because that sounds like a lot of work. But, you know, what's the deal? And he's explaining it to me. And I'll admit, for like 30 seconds, I'm like, oh, I want to be a Freemason now. It sounds weird. I like weird. But then I thought about, like, I'd have to actually commit to things and do things. I'm like, ah, oh, putting on pants is, like, the worst. Never mind. You lost me.
Yeah.
But for, like, a minute I was thinking, I'm like, get me in. Pledge me. My higher power, does it have to be Jesus? Can it be anything? Oh, my God. Fred Funstone it is. Anyway, my underrated is Blue Oyster Cult.
Oh, nice.
You know, they have some terrible songs. They definitely do.
But they have
they have a couple of good ones.
Yep.
You know, they could have busted out more than Burning for You, I think. People don't give them enough credit.
I agree.
And they're still touring. They're like 500 years old, and they're still touring the casino and carnival circuit. So get out there and, you know, get a spot next to the Tilt-A-Whirl and play the air guitar to Godzilla.
I think I might have to add that to my vinyl collection.
No, you really don't.
All right, so check it. Here's what happened to me last week related to Blue Oyster Cult.
Nice.
My band played Upstream Festival in Seattle, which is like Paul Allen's new, like, we're going to make Seattle just like Austin. It's going to be our South by Southwest. Okay, first of all, of course it was a fucking disaster and terrible. It was just like a bunch of bands playing for a bunch of like rich white tech guys. It was like devoid of any personality at all and completely like run so airtight that it was ridiculous. Like we played there's like three metal shows. That was the only like heavy music that was going to be happening, and it was like one night it had Sandrider and The Drip, one night had Eris and us and Hughes Oxyscord, and there was some other band whose name I can't remember right now. Anyway, so there's these three shows, and they were the metal shows. But the way it runs is it's run on this super tight schedule. So, like, 6 o'clock, you go on. The next band, 7:30, you go on. But there's, like, an hour and a half between when each band starts. But none of the bands like us play for an hour, much less an hour and 10 minutes or an hour and 20 minutes. So we'd play for, like, 35 minutes and then just wait around for, like, almost an hour for the next band. So it was terrible. It was terrible, terrible, terrible. Anyway, you know, I'm walking around the festival at one point, and, you know, there's lots of people that work there, too, and there's this dude who's, like kind of standing by one of the, like, VIP buses where, I don't know, Flying Lotus was hanging out or something. But he's like, hey, what's up? I go, oh, hey, what's up? You know, as I'm walking by. He goes, you know one of the bands? I go, yeah, you're playing right there tonight. He's like, oh, so cool. You know, I used to be a roadie for bands. I was like, oh, yeah. He goes, well, not really a roadie, so much as a guy who helped the roadie. And it made me think of Coach McGurk from Home Movies. We talked about how he's like, oh, Brandon, I wasn't really a roadie. I was more of a guy who helped the roadies. I was like a helpie. And but anyway, this guy was exactly like the Coach McGurk, where he's just talking. I was like, oh, yeah. He goes, yeah, like mainly like country shows and some rock shows at the, you know, Tacoma Dome. I was like, oh, cool. You know, Tacoma Dome's like our big, you know, stadium where we have shows like, you know, fucking Ariana Grande will play there, or AC/DC and stuff, like just kind of stadium rock shows. Down in Tacoma. He's like, yeah, like once I got to help out with the Blue Oyster Cult show. I was like, oh, yeah? He goes, yeah, it's pretty cool. I go, oh, that's cool. He goes, yeah, you know, I was the guy who, when they played Godzilla, like, I got to, like, push this handle and bring the big Godzilla head out. I was like, oh, cool. He goes, yeah, probably. I didn't get to see it because I was working it, but I bet it was cool. And he goes, that is my claim to fame. I was like, well, you got a good one, man.
Nailed it.
Yeah, he was stoked, you know. He seemed really, really excited about that, and I was happy to hear it. I mean, I'm kind of making fun of him right now because it's funny to me, but
it's just funny.
But that's his thing. That's his thing. That's what he'll. I mean, he said that happened like 30 years ago, and that's his story. He tells everyone that he was the one who, like, got to push the handle to make the Godzilla head come out.
So now, he was a helpie. Now they just have one of those inflatable Godzillas on stage the whole time, right? Just have some teenager pull it off when the song's over.
Yeah,
it's like this is
where air button in, like had some one of those motors that sucks the air out, so you're just like, really loud for like 5 minutes.
Like, this is what happens when you get stuck on Ridgefest 2017. We haven't had a hit album since 1981. Rick Derringer's on the side of the stage. Like, it's my turn. Will you get off the goddamn stage already?
Alrighty then.
All right.
So we're moving on to best thing ever, man. I mean, I kind of feel like I blew my load already in the beginning of the fucking show with the whole turntable and amp and speaker build, but I'm going to stick with that because I'm still super pumped about it. Now, maybe next week after I have it all hooked up and I say, man, it sounded like shit, then I won't feel so excited, but I'm pretty confident it's going to rock my face off. So, that's going to be my best thing ever because I've wanted this stupid turntable for 2-3 years now, and I've wanted this nice fancy tube amp for, I don't know, 6-8 months now.
It's awesome. There's something magic about putting on records. You're going to love it. It's a good Sunday morning activity.
Well, I mean, I used to always have the old shitty Radio Shack $20, you know, turntables, and when I tried to plug that into my newer equipment downstairs, it just sounded terrible. Absolutely terrible. So I'm hoping that it's just because of, you know, I had to get the preamp, and it was a 30-year-old $10 record player. You know what I mean? Like, I'm hoping with the semi-audiophile nerd equipment that it's going to just bring life to all my records again. Because I've got records that, obviously, I have no CDs, no tapes, no MP3s. It's just records and 7-inches that I haven't heard in 15 years, 20 years. So I'm super pumped to just put everything on and just be like, oh, my God, this was so terrible, but I love it.
You're right. Instead, we will make the difference.
I wonder if I still have that thing.
I saw someone put out like a discography of everything, and I was almost tempted to buy it because I really did like that one record at one point. But I listened to the 7-inch not that long ago, which I still have, and it's not very good.
Yeah, I mean, when I started the whole, like, I'm gonna start buying vinyl, like when I was a teenager, I bought every dumb fucking 7-inch I could get my hands on. Just, you never know, you know. Some of them were fucking really good finds, and others were like, dude, this is hilariously bad, but it's like good enough, it's bad enough to where it's like funny, so I'll keep it. So we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, well, sometimes you get a good find, sometimes you end up with the sore throat album. What was that album called? Never Mind the Bollocks, We're Not Napalm Death or whatever?
No, Never Mind the Napalm, Here's Sore Throat.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
And then there was another one about the bollocks. I don't remember what it was, though.
Yeah. My best thing ever was doing that podcast live last weekend. Oh, my God, that was the best
good one
time I've had in a while. And it wasn't a complete awkward disaster the way the last one was, because we didn't. Last time we tried to be all professional and, like, have an idea what we were doing. This time we're just like, let's just go and just do it, and it was way better.
Well, it was more of an interview / open discussion, so it wasn't just me and Brian up there. Well, Chris didn't show up this time, but he was with us the first time. But it was more of just like, you know, people in the audience were shouting out, we were talking, and it was just like a room conversation. But, you know, the four of us had mics, and it was me, Brian, Rob Southgate, and various others who were on throughout the 3 times we went up. It was super fun. I have to agree. That's a good one.
I feel like I got like 3 audible laughs, which was great because it made me feel like I was doing stand-up comedy. But also, when I mentioned the movie phone guy from Oak Brook Mall, somebody in the crowd's like, I know that guy. And I'm like, yes, it's not just me. Woo, we could start a cult based on that guy. Until he and I are roommates, then forget it.
That's weird.
Cult is over. But yeah, that was super fun. I'd do that every weekend if I could. I'd do that every day if I could.
Yeah.
Like, I totally get why Adam Carolla does that live. It's totally, totally better live, in a way. I mean, it actually probably sucks once in a while when you say something really stupid.
Yeah. Meh.
Well, I'll do my best thing ever real quick, because I got to go. My daughter's getting picked up here, and I think I might go see Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah! I'm excited for you.
Yeah. I hope so. I will see. I got to see what time it starts. But I got a comic from a friend of mine who works at Fantagraphics. He gave me one of those hip-hop Family Tree comics. I don't know if you guys have seen those. Mm-hmm. Those things are awesome. They really? Come with a flexi disc inside.
Really?
That has like, yeah, it has like tracks from like 80s hip hop, which you've never heard before because they're super obscure. They're all great.
I like it.
So I totally recommend. I mean, it's just, if you see them for cheap and it's like, you know, you don't have to start at number one. I mean, they're just like, they're standalone things. Like this one's about Run DMC. This one's about Fab Five Freddy. You know, it's just a collection of like New York hip hop.
Dude,
comics.
Buy it for the music alone.
Yeah, it come with flexi discs, and they're awesome. And the one I listened to the other day was great. And I was like, "Oh, this is fantastic! I'm gonna try to get all these," just because I love flexi discs, and they sound terrible. You know, they play awful, but I just love them for what they are.
Right.
Fantagraphics actually put out an Accused one in the early '90s that I have.
The only flexi disc that I have is, you remember that band Scab from Bloomington, Indiana?
Yeah, I think so.
It was like members of Jackhammer and Falling Forward.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I have their flexi disc. That's the only one I have.
Still have it.
I think I got it for $1 from the band.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You can still get those made, and they really don't cost anything at all, but you have to buy like 1,000 of them. So that's the
trade-off.
That's the only reason I haven't done one yet.
Well, I guess we will wrap this up and let you go and hopefully see your movie. So that's our show for the week. Like I said, we're probably 99% sure we're going to be off next week. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. Until then, you can find me on Twitter at XorsonX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Theory. You can find Damien at Damien Johnston. You can find us all on Facebook at facebook.com/reviewandroast or /thecomicroast. And I don't know, we're everywhere. Just hashtag or look at the both of those up and you'll find us. So until then, have a good week.
Yay. Woo.